Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports and also a full-time role player here at 92.9 ESPN on my show Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you can catch him on Jeffrey Wright & Company on Thursdays on X, David W. Cobb. David, how's it going? Happy Friday.
Hey, brother. Hey, happy Friday to you. How's it going? How's it going? How are you doing, Gabe?
I'm doing well. I'm 30 today. I feel different. I feel different.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Did you have a hard time with 30? I had a hard time with that one. That one was tough for me.
You know, I feel different. I do. The 3 instead of the 2. It just something about it. Something about it makes you just feel a little, I don't want to say down, but you know, you're more based in reality once you see that 3. Three in your age.
My take on it, Gabe, was this. It's basically like, you know, if you do something stupid in your 20s, then people can be like,
right.
Ah, well, he's in his 20s. You know, he'll learn from that. But if you do something stupid in your 30s, it's like, wow, he should know better. He's in his 30s. What is that guy doing?
That's a grown
man.
Yeah, fully developed brain. What are we doing? I completely understand that. All right, now, news of the day here in Memphis. Tomas Isolo officially hired by the Grizzlies. I know that this is not a surprise, but What do you think of no outside interviews, not trying to interview any experienced head coaches, no Sam Cassell, nothing like that? They right here, a week later, after the season's done, here's Tomas Isolo. How do you feel about the hire?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would have been curious to see if a Cassell or a Michael Malone might have been interested in the job because it's a win-now sort of job when you've got Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr., assuming those three players are still on your roster going into next season. But even if one of them or two of them is not, the idea is that you've made a move with them to position yourself to be competitive. So it's like it's a win-now situation regardless of what happens with the roster in all likelihood. So you might have thought that you'd go for an established voice. So, I view it as like a high-risk, high-reward type of move. I mean, the risk is that you're going after a guy with very little NBA experience, leading a win-now team. We don't know how he is from a cultural standpoint. He didn't play in the NBA, so he's kind of fighting an uphill battle from the street cred point of view in that sense within the locker room. But it's also high reward in the sense that, like, I mean, this guy was a mastermind in Europe. If you go and watch some of the, you know, the deep dives on YouTube about his the intricacies of his offense and the way he was able to get just insane offensive efficiency metrics out of Paris and some of the other teams he coached in Europe, like, okay, like you kind of see the vision there at least. And then you watch his exit interview and the way he speaks specifically about like a Zach Edey. Like clearly he has a very high view of Zach Edey, which I'm sure probably helped him win over the front office because the front office has to make the Zach Edey draft pick look good for them to kind of hold on to their jobs and look smart. So you hire a coach who has a big vision for him. Like, you know, I'm not surprised that that's the direction they ended up going. I just view it as high risk and high reward.
Well, and I think the risk is really Zach Kleiman. I mean, he put himself in harm's way. Not that I think he wasn't already being questioned by the fan base and the higher-ups there in the Grizzlies organization, but this is one of those things. You didn't do any interviews. you decided this was your guy. If it goes well, good on you. If it goes bad, you're going to be out of a job too.
Yeah, for sure. And it almost feels to me like if this was what you were going to do, and it really feels like this was a foregone conclusion and something that Zach Kleiman had decided on, you know, probably some moment he fired Taylor Jenkins, why wouldn't they have just let Taylor coach it out and be the guy?
Sure. I guess the yeah, idea because was now, that, like, now we have a sample size of 5-10, right? That's the record he had as the interim head coach. Like, That doesn't land as well. He should have probably just let Taylor Jenkins stick this thing out instead of letting the fans see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels like a misguided Hail Mary to try to catch lightning in a bottle down the stretch with Isolo when, I mean, that was never likely to transpire. I mean, you go and watch Isolo's. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you're saying
Isolo,
it right.
Isolo. Tuomas Isolo.
We did the as soon as he became the interim, we had a little inside baseball here. We had a company-wide email sending us the correct pronunciation. It's Tuomas Isolo.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've heard it pronounced about 15 different ways, and I myself have pronounced it multiple different ways. Anyway, Isolo, he takes over. He gets 15 games, and he said he had two practices. I'm not completely sure, like, that clearly does not count shoot-arounds, where, like, you can work on things in shoot-arounds. Like, if you wanted to try to implement some things in shoot-arounds, you could do that. But he said they only had two practices during his time as the head coach. And so what was he really going to be able to do? What sort of change was he actually going to be able to bring about with two practices over the last however long he had the job? So, yeah, I mean, I guess I am curious to see, like, what a full off-season of his – implementation of different schemes and things can bring, like, because, you know, that is what he is. He's a schematic guru with very specific ideas about how to play. It's just he's not maybe a culture guy, or not maybe that stern voice that we think that this locker room could use. So, yeah, man, it feels like as much as anything, like, yeah, the front office is kind of putting its neck on the line here by going all in with this guy.
Yeah, and David, we came back to this no less in our opening segment. We came back to this no less than 15 times. I don't care who the head coach was going to be, Tuomas Isolo, Sam Cassell, Michael Malone, Mike Brown, Red Auerbach, Pat Riley. I don't care who it was. The roster needs to be better. That's the most important thing. Like, we can sit here and say it was an unserious hire and all that, but the coach only does so much in the NBA. The players do the playing. You need good players. You need guys to surround this big three with. That's what you always have to come back to with where these Grizzlies are right this second.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You could also just use a healthier, more available Ja Morant. That would go a long way. Also, if you played your players longer, that would help. If you played your best players 35 minutes a game instead of 27, 28, then maybe you don't end up in the 8 seed. Maybe you end up in the 3 seed, and maybe you got a more favorable playoff draw, and maybe you develop better chemistry over the course of the season with your guys actually being on the court together for longer periods of time. What's going to be interesting to me is how married Isolo is to this whole idea that we're going to play our players in short spurts at all-out capacity, because that's one of his trademarks. Like, you go and watch, you know, some of these videos on YouTube where he's going into detail, going in depth about his philosophies, you know, from the European side and kind of what, you know, what he believes in. That's one of the things that he believes in, and that's one of the things that Grizzlies fans hated this year was the fact that, you know, that you go long stretches of time in the second half of a close game where your best players wouldn't be on the floor. And the idea is that you go 110% while you are on the floor, then you're able to outplay the opposition during that time. You get a nice breather. You come back in, you go 110% again. Well, meanwhile, you know, the other team is just going 80, 85% the whole time to preserve energy. You know, I don't know if that works in the NBA. And that's the thing, is like, this guy has such little NBA experience, and now he's leading a win now team. Like, you know, I would be much more interested in Isolo. You know, maybe I hope he works out, but like, I'd be much more interested in him if I were the you know, the GM of a rebuilding franchise, if I were the GM of the Jazz or something.
Right.
And it's like, all right, let's bring this guy in with innovative ideas to lead our young roster, and we'll all grow together. But that's not really where the Grizzlies are. So anyway, I a little bit of a side tangent there, but I just got to thinking about, when you ask, they got to get better players. Yes, they do. But like, they could also play the players that they have for longer minutes. And that's one of those things that Isolo seems a little bit, opposed to.
Yeah. Now, one thing I do want to mention when it comes to experienced head coach versus like first time head coach, there's no magic formula. Eric Spoelstra was a first time head coach. Greg Popovich was a first time head coach. Phil Jackson was a first-time head coach with the Bulls. And then you also have examples like we've seen this year with Kenny Atkinson, revitalizing the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's been examples of retread head coaches finding success. Frank Vogel was a retread that won a championship with the Lakers. Budenholzer with the Bucks. There's a lot of examples on both sides. So it's interesting. You have to weigh your options. But I don't disagree with your sentiment there. They need to play their players for longer. And his thought process on that, of playing guys a little bit less and 28 minutes for your best guys, maybe 30 minutes, that is the type of thing you would do for a bunch of young players that you're trying to figure out, not for a organization who is ready to win right this second and knows what they have on their roster. All right, now moving on to some college basketball recruiting. P.J. Carter committed to LSU. I didn't realize he was that sought after or highly thought of. That was interesting to me that he got the SEC offer and went there. But PJ Haggerty, I want to get to this. It seems like NC State's the landing spot with Will Wade. They have a lot of money. They're investing a lot of money. They can fork it over to him. There's been a crystal ball for 247 that says that he's going to commit to NC State and Will Wade. But this recruitment, all of the sort of reporting on it, like Ole Miss is out of the sweepstakes, NC State's going to take over, this is the money being offered by all these different places. I haven't seen a recruitment like this since, I don't know, Hunter Dickinson. This has been a very reported on, very followed recruitment for a college basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels to me as though Haggerty's camp has been aggressive in letting people know, hey, he's got suitors, right? Like we're not crazy for asking what we asked for. And, maybe we're really only considering one or two schools here, but, we want to create, if nothing else, the image of a competition or of a bidding war or of this guy being highly sought after, when in reality, I mean, it appears as though there were very few teams who were willing to play ball with the terms that would have been acceptable to PJ Haggerty. So, and part of it's the timing. Like he was so late getting into the portal, and one of the very few prized possessions still available out there. So naturally, a lot of the collective attention of college basketball has centered around him. And then you throw in the Will Wade, Chris Beard, Penny Hardaway. I mean, you got some of the most interesting, bombastic, sort of colorful coaches in the sport who are, at least on some level, competing for his services.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a question, and it's going to sound ridiculous to a lot of the people that watch P.J. Haggerty play for this Memphis team and average 21.7 points per game and all the stats he accrued. And he shot well from three, even though that's not something he does well. But this is a question I've been trying to ask myself and be real with myself about, and it's not just because P.J. Haggerty left Memphis. But that's part of the reason I'm really trying to dive into this question. How high is your upside as a team if PJ Haggerty is your number one option? Curiously, in your opinion.
I don't think you can win a national title with PJ Haggerty as your number one option. I think you can make a Sweet 16 with PJ Haggerty as your number one option, which is obviously nothing to scoff at.
Sure.
But no, I mean, I think if PJ Haggerty were going to be on a national title level team, I would almost view him as like the sixth man on a national title caliber team, almost like a Remy Martin was for Kansas in 22.
Yeah. Microwave off the bench.
He was an absolute bucket at Arizona State, Pac-12 player of the year, and they just like barely squeaked into the tournament. Right. And then he transfers to Kansas. There's some things that he doesn't completely, he's not completely in line with Bill Self on certain things, but he carves out a role off the bench, ends up making a big impact down the stretch. Like that's, if PJ Haggerty won a not national championship caliber team, I think that's the type of player he would be. A 22, 23 minute guy off the bench, almost like a Denzel Aberdeen was for Florida this past year in terms of what he can do for you. But he is capable of being the, you know, what sets him apart is that, like, you know, I don't think Denzel Aberdeen could be the best player on a Sweet 16 team. PJ Haggerty could do that. And that's honestly probably more fun as a player to be the best player on a good team than to be a role player on the best team. You know, so like that would be how I view PJ Haggerty. I think he's a perfect fit for a first year coach, which is something I've said multiple times, but it makes perfect sense why he would end up at NC State with Will Wade. You're just trying to get this thing off the ground. You just need somebody who can install a high floor, somebody who can go out there and score buckets for you. And so, I mean, looking at what NC State has put together so far, they really need him. I mean, they need him. And clearly, I think that would be a pretty productive partnership for both sides.
I'm glad you threw that out there, because that's sort of what I was thinking. It's just like, he's a great player. He's a bucket getter. But I think there's limits to what he can actually accomplish if he is the number one guy, just because the shooting's not quite there. He's good at creating for himself, but not for others. If the foul calls aren't there, he's definitely a little bit limited. If the whistle is being held by the officials, he's limited in what he can do in putting the ball in the bucket. And when I say this, people are going to lose their mind, but I'm going to say it. It kind of reminds me of the guard version of, like, Hunter Dickinson. Yeah, he's very good. National Player of the Year contention good. Gonna put up numbers. But does he really facilitate the winning at the highest of high levels, Final Four, that type of thing? I don't necessarily think so, because you have to run things through him, and running through him definitely limits what the rest of your roster can do.
It's like James Harden. It's like James Harden. You know, you don't not want him on your team. He's a great player.
Yes.
He's a former MVP. How many NBA titles does he have? Zero. Zilch. Not a one. I don't know that you can win an NBA title with James Harden as your best player, because the high usage rate, eventually you just run into a wall with that sort of stuff, like you did with PJ Haggerty in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, again, didn't help that Tyrese Hunter was unavailable for that game. Don't want to overlook that or blame PJ Haggerty for the loss. But I think we're on the same page here. And all this, you know, we say all this, and it's like, at the end of the day, if you're Memphis, would you take him back?
Oh, God, yes. You want him. He's a great player. None of this is to take away that he is a phenomenal All-American caliber player. But it's there's nuance. And I know nuance is lost in this day and age, but there's nuance to this conversation, I think, in general. All right, now, I was looking over some 2026 way too early mock drafts. And at the top of all these mock drafts, to the Browns, I guess, is the team they think is going to be the worst in the NFL, and that's what the draft order says. Arch Manning. How do you feel about that, man? A guy who started, what, two games? He played well in those games. Really good game against Mississippi State this past season. But is that a little overkill for you?
Oh, man, I got to see Arch Manning and Shedeur Sanders in the same quarterback room.
Connor and I brought this up. I think we could, if it's to the Browns, I think we could see an Eli Manning situation with Arch, right? The Mannings can pull some strings. I don't think they want him to go to the quarterback-killing franchise.
Absolutely not. They will make sure that does not happen. honestly, part of Arch's decision may in the long run be based upon like who he might be selected by. Because here's the thing, he could play three more years of college football. He could play 25, 26, and 27. And so he could come out in 2028. We don't know when Arch Manning's going to come out, which is going to be really interesting. Because you go and look at the track record of his uncles. I mean, Peyton Manning chose to come back for his senior year when he would have been a top five pick. Eli Manning chose to go back for his senior year at Ole Miss when I believe he was a projected first-round pick after his junior season. So who's to say? I mean, Arch, I'm sure, is being well-compensated at Texas. Like, he could be in the 26 draft. He could be in the 27 draft. He could be in the 28 draft. I mean, so I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion, but yeah, the idea of him ever suiting up for the Cleveland Browns to me is laughable.
Aren't there better NFL prospects at the quarterback position than Arch as we sit here today? Right? Like, aren't there? Or am I missing something? Well, Garrett Nussmeier or Cade Klubnik or maybe John Mateer at Oklahoma steps through and makes something happen. Aren't there better prospects? Mm.
I don't know. None of them have that last name.
Yeah, I know that, but that's the big selling point. You know, I'm talking about like skill set, production, all that. You know, film, which he doesn't have. You know,
He does not have. Well, I don't know. Like this group, it feels like the star power at the quarterback position in college football has largely been zapped. I mean, this was supposed to be a good draft eligible class right here. With behind Arch, you know, you're gonna have a Jaden Rashada and Nico, and you know, this 26 draft was gonna have some really high caliber quarterbacks in it. It does not. It's up to somebody to go out there and take it. And I guess we're just assuming Arch is going to be as good as advertised. But the fact is, like, I mean, Quinn Ewers held down that job when Arch was on the roster last year. And then Quinn Ewers, he didn't get picked until, what, the seventh round?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, man, how good is he? We don't really know yet. I mean, we saw glimpses, but those glimpses were against Mississippi State and against, you know, I mean, one of the worst Mississippi State teams in the last 15, 20 years. Haven't seen it a whole lot. And, oh yeah, by the way, Texas has a lot of receivers to replace, some offensive linemen to replace. I'm not sold that Arch Manning's the best quarterback in college football. I certainly think he has the potential to be. And I'll throw one more name at you that was not discussed. Among those who you listed, who are all good names, but I mean, from a prospect standpoint, I kind of like Lenoris Sellers at South Carolina. The big body, he can make the throws. He's mobile. Seems to have a really good sort of command of the offense for a guy who was thrust into the starting role as a lowly touted redshirt freshman last season. He's a guy who I think could really rise.
Yeah, Lenoris, though, you know, yeah, obviously want to see him throw the ball a little bit more, but the legs are enticing. I made this comparison yesterday. Tell me if this is fair. The winning version of Anthony Richardson as a prospect right now, and that could change if he shows us more this year.
Yeah, for sure. You go and look at South Carolina too. It's like, you know, this isn't a program that's had great offensive line play. It's been hit or miss. They've had great individual receivers, but they've never had a great collective group of receivers necessarily. So the fact that he was able to be so productive in his first year as the starter there, I don't know. Like I kind of like what I'm seeing there, and it was huge. I think what tells you as much as anything about a quarterback is how bad other programs want him. And the fact is, like, there were a lot of programs that were trying to get Lenoris Sellers into the transfer portal because they wanted him. And that tells me a lot. When you got multiple really high-caliber programs who are trying to fish or lure a guy into the portal, like, that tells me about what the perception around you is amongst the football brain trust. And I think around Lenoris Sellers, it's pretty strong. And so for South Carolina to be able to keep him – I thought it was really huge.
Let's throw out the NFL draft stuff here for a second, just talk about college football in general, because I thought last year, Shador Sanders, super exciting at the quarterback position. You knew you were going to get something good. Cam Ward, I thought, was that. Quinn Ewers, like you had these stars, these guys you knew were going to be great. How do you feel about the quarterback position in college football heading into the 25-26 season? Like, do you like it? Obviously, eventually guys rise, and somebody will show up that we didn't expect, but how do you feel about it?
Well, it's funny, Jeffrey and I were having this conversation yesterday, and you know, another one that I'm fascinated to see, like, there's a lot of potential in this group, just not a lot of proven production, unless you're like into Drew Aller and Cade Klubnik, which, I mean, I'm gonna be honest, neither of those guys really move. Right. They don't move the needle.
They're not exciting.
You know,
they're not exciting.
They're not. But you know who could be? DJ Lagway, right?
Yep, like we saw a little bit of him
at Florida last year. So it's like, I look at Lagway, I look at Sellers.
How about Julian Sain maybe at Ohio State?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we've literally seen nothing. Like we have not seen him at all, right? And so that's another one where it's like, and now
Nico
Iamalavea
at UCLA.
You're losing me now.
Of course I'm kidding. But it just doesn't I don't know. It doesn't have the same feel as it did a year ago, or in most years, really. I agree with your sentiment. Just unproven, not really knowing what to expect.
But I think there's some depth to it. There's just not the high end, like clear cut. Oh, this guy's your Heisman Trophy favorite, and there's no doubt, right? Going into last year, it felt like we sort of had more of that. A couple more though. Miller Moss, I believe he went from USC to Louisville. I bet he can put up some numbers.
Well,
in Jeff Blom's system.
Tyler Shuck put up numbers there, so I expect big things.
Yes. Yeah, and then, hey, don't forget about the guy, Diego Pavia. The Pavia precedent has been established. My JUCO man got another year because he sued the NCAA, and he is still playing college football.
There's a limit to that, though. Come on, David. There's a limit to my – I love Diego Pavia, but there's a limit to how excited I can get when he's at Vandy. You know, like, um, I just I love the kid. He was awesome last year, but there's a hard ceiling on how excited I can get.
There's a reason he wanted to get paid to play college football again, because he will never make a nickel playing in the NFL. No. So.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, David, best thing for last. You had a U10 game last night, or did you get rained out, or what?
I could lie to you and say we got rained out.
Did you guys lose?
I could lie. Yeah, we lost. We lost. I don't need you keeping the tally on the air.
I'm keeping the tally,
the
brother. I'm keeping the tally.
Oh, my gosh. Even my mom was like...
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Like, well, I hope you guys win one before the season ends. And I'm like, yeah, I do too, Mom. I do too. We played well. I told you the one coach is like the Nick Saban of this league, and
yeah.
He coaches two teams, and he, you know, and I just want to be his intern or something. Anyway, we were playing one of his teams, and we actually got out to a 1-0 lead, and we were pretty good throughout the game. So it was a moral victory. We're claiming a moral victory.
Yeah, I'm imagining you like you're playing the kicking and screaming role, Will Ferrell, assistant coach Mike Ditka. You've seen that movie? I'm sure you're aware
of
the film.
Yeah. Well, actually, a few of our ADHD kids weren't there, so that I'm not gonna. You know, I wish they'd been there. I want everybody there every time, but it certainly didn't hurt us to have a bit more of a focused group. I'll say a focused group.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, David, I'll let you roll, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. Connor, you're shaking your head at me. What's up?
As an ADHDer, the glue guys.
You feel disrespected.
We're the high-energy glue guys. That's what we lost.
You have to keep focus on the game plan, and it presents a challenge.
Just release them and let them go chaotic. It's the best game plan. When you have young ADHDers,
take advantage of it.
Just release them and let them bring chaos to the field.
Yeah.
How dare he? How dare he?
No, I appreciate David Cobb joining the show. He's always brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. And now that we're headed towards summer, they are locked and loaded with fresh gear for guys who don't sit still. First up, Poncho, their best-selling fishing apparel line, built for the wild and made for those who chase adventure. And mark your calendars. Get over to Oxbow 964 June Road, May 23rd and 24th. They're teaming up with Milwaukee Boot Company for a two-day event celebrating rugged craftsmanship and boots that don't quit. Then, mark your calendars for this as well. May 29th and 30th, you go by Oxbow at 964 June Road to their Mizzen and Made Trunk Show, featuring giveaways and warm weather staples built for comfort and style. And don't miss their newest arrival, Wolf and Shepherd, where athletic performance meets dress shoe polish. Yes, these shoes. Gronk. Rob Gronkowski wears them. They're sleek, sharp, and they're comfortable enough to run a 40-yard dash in, sizes up to 15. Plus, just in time for the Laker Beach, or if you're going to go tailgating, check out the latest drops from Yeti. And when you buy a cooler from Oxbow, you know what they do that no one else does? They give you free ice from their ice machine for life. You just show that you bought your Yeti cooler at Oxbow, and you can get that free ice instead of going and paying for it at a gas station. Oxbow, anchored in Memphis. 964 June Road or online at ShopOxbow, OXBEAU.com. Now, we have some NBA playoffs to discuss. We had two games last night. One is going to give us a game 7, and the other one is not. And I feel like we were robbed of the Pistons and the Knicks playing in a game 7. But all that next. We had two NBA playoff games last night. One that started us off was heartbreaking for me. I wanted to see that Pistons-Knicks series go to a game 7, and I thought we were going to get that for a moment, but that's not how it ultimately ended up. The Knicks win 116-113 on a game-winning 3 from none other than Jalen Brunson, who had 44-7 on 15-for-33 shooting in that series and his you know averages per that series in the playoffs, 31.5 points per game, 4 rebounds, and 8.2 assists per game. Now, there's a lot of people sort of conversating and having some back and forth about, is Jalen Brunson entering all-time Knicks category? And, you know, I guess you can put him on a short list. You can absolutely put him on a short list. One thing I'm going to hold off on, though, is let's get him to an Eastern Conference Finals. Let's get him to an NBA Finals before we really put him as the best Knick of all time, because a lot of people are trying to make that assumption today and make that claim. I'm not going to do that. What I will say, though, and I think this is a very, very fair way to go about this conversation if you want to put him on an all-time list for the Knicks franchise. He could be the most clutch Knick of all time. He's leading the NBA in postseason fourth quarter scoring. He had a game winner there last night against the Detroit Pistons, and he shook off Asar Thompson, a very good defender, to go make that happen. Asar still may be running.
Yeah, he didn't just shake him off. He put him in Alaska.
He still may be running from how badly he got shook. But he truly is as clutch as it gets. He obviously is not big in physical stature. He has to be crafty in ways that a lot of guys get away with athleticism. But when we talk about a guy who the moment is just not too big for, Jalen Brunson fits that. He always, always, always shows up when his team needs him late in games when it's up in the air.
Yeah, when it comes to the all-time great Knicks thing, I do think he needs to make it to an Eastern Conference Finals, and then we can maybe have some conversations about him sneaking into, like, the top seven Knicks of all time, because when you look at the list of best Knicks ever, there are some amazing players on there, like Earl the Pearl Monroe, you have Willis Reed, you have Walter Frazier, of course, and then you got Patrick Ewing. There are so – Carmelo Anthony. Like, there are so many players that are on that list that have had success before. Some have won championships. Some have made it to the NBA Finals. Some have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. So when he gets there, maybe we can start having those conversations. He's certainly one of the best Knicks of this century, I would say. Like, he's probably on the Mount Rushmore, and I understand why he's so beloved, because he plays his ass off. He never gives up. He fights through injury. Does he flop sometimes?
Yes.
Sure, but I think that his flopping is a little bit overblown. That one game was really bad, but last night, that shot, as soon as he crossed him over, everybody and their mama knew that shot was going in. As soon as he got a wide open three, there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to knock that down. It is a bit heartbreaking because the Pistons was one of our one of our favorite teams this season, one of the best stories in the NBA, and they should be holding their heads high. They threw some punches at the New York Knicks. They got two playoff wins after just a long stretch of dreadful basketball in Detroit. And this young core that they have is not done. They're only going to get better from here. This playoff experience against a team like the New York Knicks is going to bode well for them in the future. Yeah. And it was nice seeing, you know, a Memphis Tiger like Jalen Duren have such a great series. I understand that he missed the layup that ended up being kind of tough for the Pistons.
Missed free throw.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he showed up. Cade Cunningham showed up. I know he didn't have a great fourth quarter, but mostly through the series he showed up. Thompson showed up. They have a core there that they can make something happen with. So if you're a Detroit Pistons fan, you should be pleased with this series. You weren't supposed to win this series. And honestly, I am now so excited to watch the Knicks and Celtics.
Yes.
It is going to be a dogfight.
On the Pistons, though, they'll be back. I have no
doubt. They'll definitely be back.
Cade Cunningham is stepping into that top 10 range as a player. He'll be all NBA this year. He's a do-it-all guy. Jalen Duren averaged over 10 points, over 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks per game in his playoff series debut. He's a great young big. They have a Thompson. They have the pieces, the young pieces, to go make it happen. Now, going forward, you have to decide what you're going to do with your vets of Tobias Harris and, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. and all these different guys. You have to make sure you sort of balance out that roster, figure out the timeline and the money situation with all these young guys coming into their own and their contracts getting on the table, because we know that the CBA is very hard to maneuver around these days. But I fully expect them the next few years to be back, and you have to figure them in to the Eastern Conference playoff picture and actually put them in a real contender spot to be an Eastern Conference Finals team going into the future. They were a 10-1 run away in the last 2 minutes from pushing that series against the Knicks to 7 games and potentially winning it. And they were overwhelming underdogs. The Knicks were minus 430 going into that series.
Yeah, and they did it without Isaiah Stewart for most of the series, right, who was one of their enforcers. Ron Holland's only going to get better moving forward. He didn't play much in this series, but he is a young player they should be excited about. I will say, though, it is going to be interesting to see what they do with the roster moving forward. Because, like, Tobias Harris is older. Tim Hardaway Jr. is older and really doesn't really help them at all. They probably need to try to find a better replacement for Tim Hardaway. Dennis Schroeder, how long is he going to be there? Malik Beasley, how long is he going to be there? So they do have a roster that could look very different soon. But if they're able to bring this team back for the most part,
but
and
you have the
improve,
core.
Yeah, right. But and then improve on Tim Hardaway Jr., they could really make something happen. But yeah, as long as they have the core of the three guys, Thompson, Durin, and Cunningham,
yes,
they should have success, especially in the Eastern Conference.
100%. But we are all the way set for the second round in the Eastern Conference. All of the higher seeds advance. We have Cavs versus Pacers, but you mentioned it already. Celtics versus Knicks.
God, it's going to be awesome.
Should be awesome. Now, there's a couple of caveats with that. Celtics are 4-0 against the Knicks this year.
Yes.
And they have owned them. And the Knicks have not played well against great competition in the NBA.
I think they
were 0-11 against the top three teams in the NBA, the Thunder, the Cavs, and the Celtics. So that's not great. But obviously the Knicks can very much stick in this series and have a chance to win it. I'm looking at one guy, though. And Kendrick Perkins said this today. I want to give him credit as well. Karl-Anthony Towns has to step up to the plate and play physically and be a presence on the inside. He has to. He can't be soft. The Celtics will come right at him, and he's going to have to respond. So we'll see. We'll see. And he's going to have to play defense on the perimeter a little bit more, but I have to see Karl-Anthony Towns really step up. I know Jalen Brunson can do it. I like their role players, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, and otherwise. I have to see Karl-Anthony Towns be a presence for the Knicks if they're going to win this series.
100%. He has got to be a more physical player. He's got to realize that he is, at most times, the biggest guy out there. You know, 19-10 is pretty good in the playoffs, but when you are your team's second best player, it needs to be better than that, especially against the Boston Celtics, because you know that they're going to bring the physicality, and he can be a matchup nightmare for them. They have Kristaps Porzingis, but he is slower now because of some of the injuries that he has had. If Karl-Anthony Towns can put together a couple of very good games, the Knicks might be able to make this series interesting. But to your point, the Celtics have beaten them pretty handily this season, and I expect the Celtics to win this series, but I think the Knicks might be able to get 2 or 3 games, could potentially push it to 6 or 7, but it's going to come down to, can Karl-Anthony Towns show up, and can some of the wing guys show up? Like if OG has a bad game or if Mikal Bridges has a bad game, it's going to be tough for them to win. It's just that Celtics' depth is such a killer, and their bigs are always in the right place, always in the right place at the right time. And that's where, can Karl-Anthony Towns deal with Al Horford, and can he deal with Kristaps Porzingis? It's just going to be interesting to see, because you know that the rest of the Celtics are going to show up.
Will the Rockets hold off elimination and get to a Game 7 tonight? I don't know.
I don't know.
In the Bay,
thumb is interesting. Have you seen the photo of it?
It's huge. It doesn't look like a huge. It looks like an alien thumb. It's kind of ridiculous. It's the whole joint where it meets the rest of his hand is just swole up to no end. But he still dropped 31 in this series in a game. I mean, he's been great. I don't know how to feel about this one tonight. Warriors are going to be 5-point favorites, but I don't know. The Rockets played their starters mostly the entire second half. They're probably a little bit more tired. The Warriors sat down Jimmy Butler and Steph and Draymond and everybody for most of the second half. They're back in the Bay tonight. It feels like this should be a closeout for the Warriors. But the Rockets, you know, if Jalen Green pops, if they make a couple of threes, play that physical defense, anything's liable to happen. I know that's sort of a playing both sides thing, but we'll see. We'll see what it looks like tonight. Now let's go ahead and wrap up hour number two coming up next with Small Talk. Stick around. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now earlier in the week when the Bucks were knocked out by the Indiana Pacers from the playoffs, We had a run-in, of course, with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Tyrese Halliburton's father, John Halliburton. He came up to Giannis and showed a towel with Tyrese's face on it and was talking a little bit of trash back and forth with Giannis. Giannis didn't take kindly to it. And then John Halliburton, the day after, got on local news in Indianapolis and was talking about the situation. And he expressed some level of sorry, but he also, in the same breath, said that he was not trying to antagonize Giannis. He wasn't trying to talk trash, which I found kind of ridiculous. You got right up in his face right after he lost the game, got knocked out of the playoffs, and threw up and clearly antagonized him, threw up the towel and everything else. Now, in response, the Indiana Pacers have had conversations and said John Halliburton will not be able to attend the team's home and road games for the foreseeable future. Fair? Unfair? Where are we at on this? It's not being able to show.
The entire time feels a bit much. I was thinking like maybe a game or two, or put him in a box and just not let him sit down next to the court.
Foreseeable future?
Foreseeable future seems a bit much.
It seems kind of, imagine, and this is a real possibility, that it could happen. Pacers play the Cavs. They could win that series.
Yeah.
Getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, you're telling me John Halliburton can't show up to the game and
like road
watch
games.
His son?
I understand the road games.
Sure, but like watch his son at home and on the road? In the Eastern Conference Finals? That said, all you have to do, instead of having him courtside, put him in a box or put him in a regular seat.
Or just put him in a regular seat.
Yeah. Just so he can't have access to the court. I don't like what John Halliburton did. I thought it was stupid, and I didn't like his response after the fact. But I think we're going a little overboard to where he can't watch his son in person.
It feels overboard. What he did was stupid, and it shouldn't have happened, and he shouldn't have access to the court or courtside seats. No doubt about it. Maybe even say, listen, man, you can't come to one game. The punishment is you can't see one game. The whole series? And road games? It's not like he didn't actually fight Giannis.
It could have got
there. They could, but they didn't. They didn't. So, we shouldn't be doing punishments off of what could have happened. We should be doing them off of what happened. It's just the whole thing. Foreseeable future feels a bit much.
Yeah.
What he did was stupid. But
this was avoidable without completely banning him from games.
Yes. Exactly.
It's just weird to me that they went this far. I don't mind them punishing him for it.
Right.
And they should have. Yeah. But the punishment doesn't need to be you can't go watch your son in person in the NBA playoffs. That seems
ridiculous. Nosebleeds. Got your name on him.
Exactly. Just make sure he can't get to the court after that.
Right.
All right. So we started this week with one silverback gorilla versus 100 men. Who wins? I found a very interesting question that was posed on social media last night. It's sort of along the same lines. You have to survive 20 minutes. You have four choices. Silverback gorilla.
Uh-huh.
Tiger.
Uh-huh.
Grizzly bear. Hippo. If you get through 20 minutes.
Where am I?
You get $100 million. Who are you picking? What animal are you picking to survive?
You're
in their habitat.
I'm definitely not picking a hippo.
They're mean and they'll come after you immediately. You're not surviving 20.
What were the other ones?
Tiger, grizzly bear, silverback gorilla. I have seen the I think you narrow
it's the
this
gorilla.
I think you narrow this down.
I think it's a gorilla or a tiger.
I think you narrow this down to silverback gorilla or grizzly bear.
Really?
All these things are ripping you apart. There's just no doubt about it. I think hippo and tiger are the most naturally aggressive to humans when you encroach upon their land.
I thought that'd be a grizzly bear would be more aggressive.
I have seen humans come across grizzly bears who will tear you to shreds. Don't get it wrong. But I've seen them come across grizzly bears relatively close encounters, and the grizzly bears don't harm them. I've also seen that with a silverback gorilla. Obviously, let's stipulate you're not near their kids.
Right. Because if it was kids, then grizzly bear, absolutely not.
And same with the silverback gorilla. All these things would kill you if you're near their kids. You just come across them one-on-one out on a walk.
I think I have to go with gorilla because it's the one that has the most chance of not caring you're there, I think. It might just be chilling. And if you, like, get small and, like, act like you're not a threat, it might leave you alone. The other ones will look at you as food.
I think
that's the problem.
I think I'm going grizzly bear.
Really?
I think I'm going grizzly bear.
Dude, there's no way I'm going grizzly bear. There's no way. Is that death too? Rough.
No, but the silverback gorilla death is terrible.
I feel like they're
intelligent.
Small,
they can torture you, dude.
But I think their intelligence.
They can tear your arm off of your body.
I think is why I might roll. Because if I got small and acted like I wasn't a threat, I think it would leave me alone. They're territorial, and if I pretended as if I like bowed down to it, I think it would leave me alone. The bear and the tiger are looking at you as food, and the hippos are just mean
They're
as hell.
They're just mean. They don't even look at you as food. They just want to kill you.
They just want to kill you. They mess people up.
Yeah, and also water. You'd be coming across
yeah,
them
no
in water.
Way.
No chance.
No way.
I don't know. I think I got to go grizzly bear.
I think I'm going to go gorilla.
Okay. But we're in agreement. Like tiger and hippo. They're out of the question.
Yeah,
I'm not taking my chances
with them. Yeah.
I hear.
Listen, man, a house cat has messed my ass up.
Yes, exactly. Hey, one human versus 100 house cats. You're going down.
You're dead.
Yeah.
You're dead.
You're very dead.
Yeah, like what are we talking about? You're dead.
Hour number 3 is on the way. Parker Fleming is next. We'll talk some grizzlies and the hiring of Tomas Isla.